Again, that's Allison Clayman, director of Ai Weiwei, Never Sorry. Well, critics, what did you think of the film? Cynthia, you sort of suggested you were pretty high on it.
I am. It was beautifully done. And for a young woman, she was 24 when she started this project.
Wow.
Out of Brown, no real direction. She just wanted to go to China, spend some time, and get to know the country. And one thing led to another. And she wound up just shooting some documentary footage of an opening of his. And it just shows you how frequently it's just serendipity that gets someone from one place to another. And the story's not over. I mean, we're all concerned as to what his fate is in China. He was put in jail for 81 days. People didn't know where he was. Needless to say, his mother was quite worried and upset. He comes back, and he seemed like a very broken man when he returned. There were cameras that caught him showing up at his studio after his imprisonment. And the government claims that he owes them $2 million in taxes. So they're going that route. They're not, criticizing him for political activity. It's so he just didn't pay his taxes. And all of a sudden people started sending money, and he knows how to use the medium that exists today in such a brilliant way, the internet, blogging, and this film. Mm-hmm. I mean, he participated in this because I believe he felt like it could get his message out to, again, a broader audience. So I'm jumping all over the place here, but I think it's a wonderful story about freedom of expression and also a fascinating study of how media affects culture and politics.
There's some great suspense in this film, too. She is there, literally, when the Chinese officials come bursting into a hotel room, and he's beat up, and she's there right when he's sort of released. There's footage of officials kind of walking up to her camera lens and saying, who are you? What are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, get out of here. It's pretty intense.
And the movie, though, isn't a hagiography. It isn't making him a cardboard saint. I mean, late in the film, you get this little passage of him playing with the son he had out of wedlock, and the filmmaker asks, how's your wife feel about this? And he's kind of like, well, she's not too thrilled, you know? I mean, come on. So like a lot of people, like a Picasso maybe, you know, to a certain extent, they tend to write their own rules. So it isn't like this. They totally whitewash this guy as, you know, a saint. He's a real human being with real issues.
And I'm sure editing was a real issue. I mean, that was a question I had for her. I mean, she's got thousands of hours of footage. And I think the editing job was excellent. I mean, it created a narrative here that was really compelling and very, very interesting.
Yeah.
I want to mention it's showing at the Tivoli and also the Glenwood Arts.
Last thing is that you get to watch this man and see the power of his art, not just being art. It has so much more going on to it. Like the backpack piece she was talking about is so moving and so sad.
Yeah.
About all these young children who died as a result of shoddy construction of their schools.
Yeah, it's a really good film.
I was just amazed that the authorities allowed this film to be made, even when they had chances to shut it down, and that he isn't in prison. I mean, you almost can't believe it, watching the arc of his career and what he's done over there.
I agree with you, Steve. It's worth your time, worth your effort to see this story. Who knows where it's going to lead? But he was recently he's fighting through the court system, and this is another one of his tactics. And he said, "If we're a country of laws, we'll use the laws." But he appealed that ruling against him, and the appeal was just denied, I think, a couple of weeks ago. So again, we don't know where it's going to go.
Okay, again, that film, Ai Weiwei, worth going to see. Ai Weiwei, Never Sorry. Okay, how about a film opening today, The Queen of Versailles, Steve Walker?
This is another documentary. I know we always talk about True False, but we saw it there. You know, it's finally opening here. It's just as good in a totally different way. It's about David and Jackie Siegel. He's a short-tempered timeshare resort magnate, and his wife, Jackie, who's kind of cartoonishly structured.
Pneumatically enhanced.
Yeah, let's say that. They have 8 children. This is the lifestyles of the rich and fatuous is what I wrote, because what happens is they're inspired by the gaudiness of the Versailles in France, and so they're setting out to build what would have been the biggest single-family home in the United States. Well, the bottom of the economy fell out. people's timeshares that they were. We actually watched them being sucked into this con. I mean, he made a lot of money doing that. But once they lose their wealth, we get to watch them live as real people, but yet they're so used to this rich, lush life, they don't know how to live in the real world. There's a scene, I'm going to spoil it, but it is so funny. She's flies coach, the indignity of flying coach. She goes to another town. She shows up at the Hertz rental car kiosk, and she says, "And my driver's name will be..." He said, "You don't have a driver."
Steve, you kind of wonder. Did she do that on purpose, knowing it would get a rise
out of it? It's entertaining as hell, though.
It is. I agree. I think we need psychologists sitting around the table here today, not film critics, analyzing this couple and their family. Siegel has filed a lawsuit against the filmmaker, and it's a no-win lawsuit. Everyone sort of agrees. But what upsets him is that he feels like the film misrepresented the condition of his timeshare business, that it isn't in the tank. As a result, it's hurting his business.
Yeah.
I want to mention that the filmmaker Lauren Greenfield is the director of the film. She manipulated the sequences. In fact, there's a scene where there are empty offices, and you assume chronologically this is what happened in 2008 when the bottom fell out of the real estate market. Well, that was shot earlier when the film first began, and apparently there was another office with people working for this timeshare business. Also, she takes you on a tour of this 90,000 square foot. That's obscene. It really is. A tour of this house with 10 kitchens and whatever. Wow. But there are no tools. There's no construction equipment or whatever. Well, this was way after, toward the end of the story when they shut down construction. The implication is that she's taking you through the house that they are in the process of building. And there's a couple of other instances. So,
I think you're overthinking it because the story is told chronologically.
I agree.
But and she's a filmmaker. She's not an attorney.
I agree. But what I'm saying is that we are very gullible as when we watch documentaries as taking it as truth. And this is what happened. Mm. And we are being manipulated frequently. I mean, guess what? Nanook of the North. Nanook was staged. I mean, surprise, surprise.
But there's truthiness there.
Yeah. Bob, what do you think?
Whether it is gospel or not, it's a wildly entertaining film.
Oh, yeah.
This woman is a hoot.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder if having too much money makes you dumb. Because she started out with an engineering degree, and I couldn't get an engineering degree, so she had to have something moving upstairs.
Right.
Well, it moved about 10 inches lower.
Bob,
and yeah. Anyway,
she's very likable.
She is likable. I thought the amazing thing about this film is that when it started, I thought I'm going to hate these people,
uh-huh.
And by the end, I actually felt kind of sorry for David Siegel, a guy who really doesn't care about money; he cares about his business. And you see this guy really going to pieces because his business is tanking.
Right. He kind of cocoons himself in this one room of the house while the multiple poodles are leaving their litter.
And they
all
have
over
to fire
mansion.
Most of their household staff, yeah, which leaves the floor looking like a dog park.
You want to laugh at them, but at times when I saw it, the laugh got caught in my throat because you really felt for them in a weird way by the middle of the movie. It's very strong.
What's the clip we got here,
The
Steve?
Clip is David Siegel's birthday party, and I think we're going to hear from his wife, Jackie.
All right.
Happy birthday to you.
By not taking any money off the table, I'm at the mercy of the bankers. They say jump, and I say how high.
No. I think he's humbled. My husband's humbled, which I kind of like it, actually.
What would you wish for in the last 25 years of your life? Besides me, of course.
If I have to live to 150, that's what I'll do, if that's what it's going to take to get back on top again.
Those aren't edible candles.
She likes him humbled.
Well, the filmmaker likes these people a lot, even though he is now suing her.
Why is he suing her?
Because he claims it's out of sequence and there's things that aren't true. But they allowed her to...
And that it's damaging his business.
But they allowed her to follow them around with cameras for a long time. You know, it's this whole reality TV phenomenon, too, where people are seen at their most hideous, but at the same time, they know the cameras are there. So it kind of comments on that, too, while being this incredibly entertaining, hilarious, sometimes heartbreaking movie.
Hilarious ouch.
Yeah.
On the program this hour, we're visiting with our film critics Bob Butler, Steve Walker, and Cynthia Haynes about the latest art, independent, and foreign films showing. Here's one that's now showing Killer Joe, Steve Walker, a pornographic film about a Texas lawman who moonlights as a hitman.
Well, wow. It's not pornographic at all.
That's what the script
says. Well, okay.
Here,
that's what Cynthia says. Yeah.
But it is made, perhaps the first NC-17 movie we have reviewed on this program. They don't make them any much.
And NC-17 means what?
Means no one under 17 will be allowed
in
the theater.
You can't get in because it's so rough.
It's so brutal. Yeah. Let me give you some background. It's written by the Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Tracy Letts, who won the Pulitzer for August Osage County, which is being filmed with Streep.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it off Broadway 15 years ago. It's about a contemporary film noir about a loser played by Emil Hirsch in Hawk to drug dealers. So he convinces his father, Thomas Hayden Church, that they can have his biological mother killed for insurance money and help everyone out. And the gun for hire is Killer Joe, the title, a sick, twisted Matthew McConaughey, who's also a police officer. When he realizes they can't pay his upfront fee, McConaughey offers a deal. He offers a deal to Hirsch. Give me your sister.
Young teenager.
She's 20.
Virginal.
She's
well,
20.
The actress, but in the, well.
No, in the character's 20, Cynthia. So he says that, and this she's a little Lolita and Daisy Dukes, and on it, the story goes and gets sicker and more twisted and more violent as we go forward.
I thought this was a Jim Thompson pulp novel as interpreted by John Waters on cough syrup. It's very cynical, very funny. It really has a good time playing with white trash, you know, iconography. My big concern is that once you get past the amusing and or violent things, you know, the sort of the eye candy, as it were, there's not a whole lot going on here.
And what's the point of a film like this? I mean, if it's that violent, that sort of out there, I want
Cynthia to have her piece. I really do, to say her piece. But I will say that it's misogynistic and gratuitously sensational towards the end. But it is gorgeously shot by the great cinematographer Caleb Deschanel. And so you've got this contrast of this brutality on the screen, gorgeously shot in a world of trailer parks and pit bulls, tethered to trailers.
And a well-known director, William Friedkin, who did The Exorcist and The French Connection. I mean, this isn't, you know, bottom of the barrel.
Who also did Bug, another Tracy Letts play adaptation.
Cynthia, I want to hear it. Yeah.
Let her go.
I understand that this is a black comedy, all right? But there are relentless scenes of brutality and prolonged sexual humiliation. And I'm sorry, to be so graphic and show on screen women and children sexually assaulted is extremely disturbing to me. Extremely disturbing.
I don't get the point of the movie.
It's a contemporary film noir.
Yeah, film noir is about the sleaziness. Basically, that's
how
the
low
point.
Can people go?
Wait, is there a place? Now, is there a place for abuse of kids?
There's no abuse of children in the movie.
He asks her in a scene, "How old are you?" She says, "I'm 12." He says, "Think of me as your 12-year-old boyfriend." As he proceeds to violate her, that's amusing.
No, it's not amusing,
and that's sick.
But they're adults, play acting. I could argue this all day.
But why? What's the entertainment value? Why is this film made? I mean,
Tracy Letts is a Pulitzer Prize winning author, and that they thought that this play has been done in Kansas City. With the Living Room did it downtown
just a few months ago.
Yeah.
Now I was curious because I did catch a clip of Matthew McConaughey. Now this is a quote from an interview that he gave to a Fox television station. He said, "I thought the script was gross, threw it in the trash. I just thought it was icky, sticky, gross, and I didn't want to be in that company." And then he gave it to some friends and family. And he says, once I got the humor, it allowed me to see the story and the humanity. And I thought, oh, that just reconfirms how brilliant you are, Matthew McConaughey.
Well, it's people, you're laughing at them. I don't think, you know, I don't think it's funny as you did, Bob.
I thought it was pretty amusing. I'll tell you what, McConaughey is really terrific in this.
He is good, in fact.
When he gets away from that stupid rom-com stuff, he's a fine actor, especially if he's in a movie set in Texas, like Bernie or this one. So I have to say
Lone Star.
Yeah, his steely-eyed, you know, twisted cop who doesn't overact. If anything, he is so tightly wound and contained that it makes it twice as creepy.
Let me just say, it's very good. Our listeners are forewarned. That's all.
Yeah, please be forewarned. And it is rough going. But
Steve,
at the same time, it's beautifully shot.
What's the clip?
Emile Hirsch is meeting Killer Joe McConaughey at an amusement park, kind of trying to renegotiate his fee.
To kill his mother.
Well, sir, instead of me kicking this off, maybe this, you could tell us the questions we need to ask.
It's pretty simple. You're going to pay me for a service that I'm going to perform. You're going to give me the particulars of her schedule, her habits. I'll act on them accordingly. I won't give you many details on my activities because the less you know, the better for everyone involved.
All right.
Now, I only have a couple of rules that I insist on sticking to. Insist.
Okay, yeah.
If you're caught, if you're implicated in this crime, you are not, under any circumstances, to reveal my identity or participation.
Oh, of course.
If you break this rule, you'll be killed. Do you understand?
You can almost see a forked tongue slithering out of his cobra-like mouth. I mean, he is a horrible person in this film, and it's very well acted by Matthew McConaughey.
Film is Killer Joe, and you have been forewarned. We have an interesting email here from Gabby at UpToDate@KCUR.org. She emails, I'm so tired of truthy documentaries. Thank you for pointing out the staging of some scenes in The Queen of Versailles. A documentary is a film that records events as they happen, not one that is staged. A fake documentary is no more credible than a bad reality show.
Okay.
There you go. Okay. How about some films that have already opened? Bob Butler, how about the new Neil Young documentary directed by, again, for the third time, Jonathan Demme?
That's right. Well, if you're a Neil Young fan.
And I am.
Good
Can't
for
get
you.
Enough.
You're going to love
get
it.
Enough, right?
Basically, what we've got here is a Neil Young solo concert. He plays a lot of his old stuff, but what makes it interesting is he accompanies himself on a bunch of different sorts of instruments that you might not have thought of. So that gives the old stuff a new kick. And he does a lot of songs from his La Noise album in 2010. That's when this was shot. The quote-unquote documentary part of it has him driving around his old haunts in Ontario.
That's the town in North Ontario that is
exactly
the lyric and
helpless,
famous
helpless,
song.
Helpless, yes. Mm-hmm. And we have a clip here that's Neil with his brother, and they are visiting the vacant lot where their house used to stand.
But then he gets into the 1956 Crown Victoria.
Yes,
he drives around.
And the car, I have to admit, is like gets equal billing in this one. Or...
It's in my head. That's why you don't have to worry when you lose friends. Because they're still in your head, still in your heart.
You know, the most interesting moment in this movie for me was Demme took a mini camera and put it on the concert microphone into which Neil is singing, and you get a perspective on him known heretofore only by his ear, nose, and throat man.
I was going to say, you watch Neil Young's tonsils dance as he sings Helpless, Helpless. I mean, it was just absolutely almost too much.
Almost too much.
Yeah. You know, it was a pretty good film.
It was.
You know, I'm a huge Neil Young film. The last film, Neil Young, Heart of Gold, I felt was terrific.
It is.
Just over the top. Neil Young dealing with illness, a brain aneurysm, if I recall correctly. This film got a little sleepy in parts in the middle, and you're wanting a little more, I think, Cynthia.
I absolutely agree with you. I loved Heart of Gold. I thought it was very well
terrific
done.
Terrific film.
Yes, and I was a bit disappointed with this as a result. But it reminded me, though, how much I loved his earlier work, and some of his more recent stuff seemed a bit trite relative to what he used to do.
Yeah, this film felt like it was sort of thrown together just to make another one to have a good time
but
on the road with Neil Young.
He's also very fortunate to have Jonathan Demme in his corner because his, you know, performances, his music will live on, you know, as long as there are DVDs.
What did you think of the camera on the microphone
the nose
stand
cam?
So you can actually, you know,
the nose
boy,
cam was over the top a
I
little.
Mean, Neil's face was almost larger than life. I wonder how Neil Young felt about being exposed quite like that. Okay, that's Neil Young's new film. Let's move on to Ruby Sparks by Bob Butler.
I really enjoyed this movie. It's a romantic comedy. If someone had told me that it was written by Woody Allen, I'd say, yeah, I can buy that because it's a fantasy with romantic elements and philosophical underpinnings. Zoe Kazan, who also stars as the title character, wrote this. She is the granddaughter of Elia Kazan, the brilliant director of On the Waterfront and other movies. So she inherited some smarts. The script is about a teenage novelist who had a huge hit. Now it's 10 years later, and he's got writer's block. He can't do anything. This guy is played by Paul Dano, who you may recall as Daniel Day-Lewis's antagonist in There Will Be Blood and is the kid who wouldn't talk in Little Miss Sunshine. And incidentally, this film, Ruby Sparks, is directed by Jonathan Dayton and Valerie Faris, who did Little Miss Sunshine. So that's a pretty good pedigree right there. Anyway, our hero is Calvin. His psychiatrist says to him, maybe you can get over your writer's block if you write. Well, why don't you write about your dream girl? This is a guy whose personal and his career their lives are just terrible. Mm. So he creates a dream girl, types her all out, and lo and behold, one morning he wakes up and she's in the kitchen. She has materialized. Now, what makes this interesting is that they play this very cleverly because he reacts as most people would in this circumstance, I'm going nuts. And then he realizes other people can see her. His brother's talking to her. He's done it. Now, here's where the film gets really interesting. Ruby is the woman, his dream woman. He created her. But the more time she spends in the real world, the more she starts getting a mind of her own. And suddenly he realizes he's going to have to keep rewriting her if he wants her to be malleable, if he wants her to be his dream girl. And the moral kind of at the bottom of this comedy, which turns a little bit sober toward the end, is that you can't have love if you're dictating the terms of the relationship in that way. If you're rewriting your loved one to meet your expectations, that person is now a slave.
You hit it right on the head, Bob. I was pleasantly surprised by this film. I am not a big Paul Dano fan. He has had a very strange inflection when he spoke. And I guess he went to voice coach or someone and comes across as a very basic, decent guy. And I was really impressed with his performance. But what surprised me was that, in fact, Dano and Zoe Kazan are boyfriend-girlfriend. They've been in a long-time relationship, and she wrote the screenplay and stars in the film with him and did a wonderful job. And I think they both brought something. There is a chemistry between the two of them, I think, as a result of that real-life relationship. I thought it was kind of amusing that the tagline was, "She's out of his mind."
Instead of out of his league,
right.
He's out of his mind. Yeah.
But my one criticism was that Antonio Banderas is cast as Calvin's stepfather and Annette Bening is Calvin's mother. And they just kind of distract. I think
it was almost too much.
It was a little too much. It took it someplace where it didn't really need to go. But
and it didn't go anywhere, those scenes with Bening and Banderas.
Yeah.
What I found the first half sort of like a I Dream of Jeannie.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Isn't
that ironic?
She was just here the other day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's right.
I haven't listened to it yet. Yes. But anyway, the first half was more kind of like I Dream of Jeannie with this kind of fictitious person not from the real world. And then as it got darker, as Bob alluded to, I thought it got pretty dark as he starts to rewrite her because she gets out from under his thumb and it comments on you can try to possess your partner at your own peril and be careful what you wish for. Those kinds of things are addressed. And I thought of Woody Allen too a couple times in her really good script.
Yeah. What's the clip?
Well, what is the clip? Does anybody remember? They're meeting in a park. And the weird thing about it is you can't tell if this is the first scene in the movie or the last scene in the movie, because this scene is repeated twice and it's a little variation. But listen.
From Ruby Sparks.
She's so cute.
What?
Your dog. She's so cute.
Oh, he's a boy dog.
He just peed like a girl.
Have we met before?
I don't think so. What's your dog's name?
Scotty. I named him for F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Who?
F. Scott Fitzgerald, the novelist.
I don't read a lot of fiction.
Oh, he's probably one of the greatest novelists who ever lived.
Naming your dog after him, it's a little disrespectful.
No, it's a gesture.
Yeah, an aggressive gesture. Think about it. You're a novelist. Do you think this guy's the greatest? So you name your dog after him to cut him down to size. Kill your idols, man. I'm all for it.
Now,
she's
witty.
Smart.
How clever she is that
She's
dialogue?
Very clever. She's written a couple plays, too, that have been seen off Broadway.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're talking about the latest art independent foreign films now showing. Bob Butler's all kinds of stuff going on at the library.
Oh, man, my baby is about to be delivered into this world.
Okay.
For a long time now, I've been working on a film series called Movies That Matter, and it's masterpieces of world cinema. We're showing them at 1:30 on Sunday afternoons at the Plaza Library down in the Truman Forum. It's the big auditorium in the basement.
Yeah.
I have had more fun with this because it's a chance Okay, I'm a bully. I'm taking my favorite movies and I'm making other people watch them. Anyway.
That's okay.
It starts out on Sunday, September 2nd, and we start out with the alpha and omega of film criticism movies, Citizen Kane, because anything you can say about any movie, you can apply to Citizen Kane. But I don't want you to think we're all stuffy here, because 2 weeks later we do Buster Keaton's The General, one of the great silent film comedies, and we're working on live musical accompaniment for that. We follow it up on the 30th with Ingmar Bergman's The Seventh Seal, in case you were having too much fun with the previous show.
With Ruby Sparks.
But some of the other stuff we're doing Rashomon by Kurosawa, Raging Bull by Scorsese, Nosferatu for Halloween, The Bicycle Thieves, The Manchurian Candidate, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. We're doing a Hitchcock. We're doing a musical, Singing in the Rain. So this is going to be lots of fun. I get 5 minutes of intro and 5 minutes of outro. Mostly it's the movie, though. And I'll tell you what, at the end of this thing, you are going to have yourself kind of like a film 101 immersion.
You're doing one of my favorite films of all time, one of the most perfect movies ever made, and that is All About Eve.
Yep. Absolutely. Hmm. So it's going to be fun. Please go to the Kansas City Library, kclibrary.org. You can get the full schedule. I'm excited.
Yeah.
Wow, it sounds terrific.
And for anyone who goes to all of those movies, you really hold your own at any party when it comes to conversation about cinema.
Mm-hmm. What else is coming up, Cynthia? You had some things you wanted to mention here.
Yes, Liberty Hall in Lawrence Film Church on Sunday, August the 26th. A classic film served with brunch. They'll be showing The Third Man. Doors open at 10:30 a.m. and the movie starts this Sunday. They do it once a month. Also, Leedy the documentary. Steve, he was an artist.
He is an artist.
Is he a local artist?
Yeah.
They'll be presenting a documentary about him at Screenland Crossroads on the 31st at 8:30 in the evening.
So, Laura Spencer, our arts reporter, had a story about the movie this morning.
An excellent story about him, right. Also, the 21st Latin American Cinema Festival of Kansas City is August the 25th through September the 22nd at the Rio Theater, 80th and Metcalf. It'll be Saturdays at 11 a.m. There'll be films from Mexico, Spain, Argentina, and Peru.
All right.
The Paris Opera Ballet at the Tivoli, La Source, Sunday, August the 26th at 1:30 and Wednesday, August the 29th. And Fat Boy Slim will be broadcast August the 31st at 9:15 p.m. at the Tivoli. So we have a lot of things going on around town. And, Bob, you think you have
I got
one?
One more thing.
All right.
You guys familiar with Miloš Forman?
Oh, yeah.
Great director. Throughout October and September and October at the library, we're doing Mondays with Miloš. This is his 80th birthday anniversary year. We're starting it out on September 10th with David Thompson, the great film critic and writer, who's going to be introducing One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And then we're going to go on and do his other movies, such as Amadeus, The People vs. Larry Flint, Man on the Moon. This is a guy who lost his parents to the Nazis, who grew up under communism, who fled to the West, and ended up winning two Best Director Oscars. Now, that's a story.
Just quickly, your three to see. What would you
My
put
three
on
to
your
see
list
this week? The Queen of Versailles, Ai Weiwei, Never Sorry, and Moonrise Kingdom, which is still holding on.
Cynthia.
Paul Dano film to that.
Ruby Sparks.
And I agree with both of them.
Okay. Their three to see are always on our website, kcur.org. Our film critics are Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler. Thanks all for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our show's theme music is by Bobby Watson and the UMKC Conservatory of Music Concert Jazz Band. We had help this week from KCUR's Kim Noble. Today's show was produced by Danny Alexander. Our senior producer is Steven Steigman. Have a great weekend, all. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.